Welcome to Thundercast, Thunder Tech's podcast where we give you our take on what's new in marketing, what's cool, what's lame, and why you should care.
Hey, welcome back to Thundercast, Thunder Tech's regular podcast. As always, I'm Craig Israel, creative director of Thunder Tech, and we have a very special format this time. So we are releasing this podcast in conjunction with our mid-year trends book. Our trends book, of course, is a publication that we put out every year that catalogs some of the hot trends in marketing that we think are going to be interesting to our clientele and to the marketing community at large. So I have two very special guests with me today. I'll let them introduce themselves.
Hey, Bruce Williams, Senior Director of Development Department here at Thunder Tech. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Howdy. Jason Therian, President of Thunder Tech.
So these guys are here because they are super knowledgeable about today's topic and, if I may be so bold, also very handsome men.
Oh, thank you, Craig. Extra points.
Today's topic is iterative design. So this is a topic that we're going to cover in a little more detail in the trends book itself as well as this podcast. So before we jump into it, let's define iterative design. So at its heart, iterative design is just taking a product or service, making it slightly better with each iteration, collecting feedback, and doing that again and again until you have a perfect, functioning, beautiful product. Does that sound fair?
Absolutely.
So the idea of iterative design is as old as people making stuff. Now, of course, what we're interested in today is how this applies to a lot of what our clientele does and how that lives in the digital world. So, yeah. Bruce, how's iterative design come to play in digital world?
Yeah, okay. Digital. So you think immediately digital, you think web. Websites, mm-hmm. microsites, campaign pages.
Email.
Email templates, right. Email design, anything that takes a function and form together and its interface for the customer. So I guess maybe we should back up and talk about the traditional method of web design. And and Jason, you can chime in because, you know, you've been involved quite a long time with it.
I was at the early stages of the web.
Yes, yeah. Before WordPress, before all that.
In the 60s at the military invention of it.
Very good. So it's the, you know, we need a web redesign. Let's get everyone in a room. Let's talk through it. Let's hit each other over the head. Let's get a design together and launch it. And
as part of that, we'll throw away everything we've done before, right?
That's right. We'll go through a lot of critical thinking. 100%. We'll have a lot of thought put into it, and then we launch it, and then we check the box, and it's business as usual until either a change of guard, mm-hmm. be it at the executive level or a chief marketing officer comes aboard and says, let's rattle this up, let's shake it up, and let's do it again. So at that point, it's go through the process again.
Right.
So
that build-bust cycle. I think that's usually what we had seen for more than a decade is build up, let it rust, tear it down. Sound about right?
That seems to be the part that really made it inefficient is that it just sat there forever until there was a critical need. Right, there wasn't any proactive efforts to address it before it, but it essentially you drove your car until the wheels fell off, and then you had to buy a new car.
Right, absolutely. Right. Yep. So I think that's where we've been hearing from a lot of clients over the last just couple of years on how do we get more out of this investment. And I think as years have gone on, digital in general has become more important to every brand, some critically important. That their businesses are built on it. And literally, many, many brands would go away if it were not for having a functioning site, whether it's e-commerce or some sort of operational aspect is handled through their site. So we're saying, how do we get out of this boom-bust cycle with website launches? And ta-da, we have web iteration, right? Where it's how do we take a little bit more care and feeding of our site over time, allow the data to drive us, et cetera, et cetera. And all this sounds great. And most of the feedback, especially a couple of years ago, was around, this is really only for big companies, right? And I think, Bruce, you can talk about this. We've worked with plenty of enterprise brands. they've been doing this. They wouldn't build their business on something so significant and then not touch it. You know, it's more on the middle market size companies and smaller ones that this is a newer approach for.
Yeah, and I think it may be the folks that are at the bigger corporations. There's a perception that they've seen more. They've been through more of the process. They understand what you need to be looking at on a continual basis, and they have, I think, more staff to help them stay disciplined to do so. Where mid-market, you could be literally a staff of one,
sure,
with some help or shared resources from other departments to help you guide through this, or you pay an agency to help you. And it depends on how you frame that relationship with the agency. If it's just deliver me these numbers at this time and go about your day and I'll look at them and I'll decide if I need to act on anything, then we go and talk again. But the mid-market is especially interesting because I think there's so much opportunity there. I don't know what that term is with the technology, how it doubles itself. Over X amount of years,
oh, and it just right. the different laws.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So
Moore's Law.
Moore's Law. Thank you.
Moore's Law.
Thank you, Craig.
I'm here.
I think business opportunity is speeding up. I think there's that the first one to market has the advantage, and I think the first one to make a splash with any kind of experience or gain in customer service, experience, journey, buyer journey, etc., has a distinct advantage, and those advantages eventually melt away as others catch up.
Right.
Well, it seems like there's the clientele is accelerating too, or I should say their attention span is decreasing, right? That there was a time where you could build a website, and if it was functional and provided enough information, that was enough that customers could come and find what they want. But now it seems like a lot of online shoppers, they want to be entertained, right? And so mm-hmm. that requires constant, frequent updates, if not to the content itself, then to the visual design, something about the brand maybe, that there's just too many choices for customers to stick with an old, outdated looking site.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with the consumerization of things, right? That, for many years, especially the business-to-business clients or industrial types would say, yeah, we're not a consumer brand, right? So we don't need to do these types of things. But frankly, their consumers were treated well by other consumer brands, and mobile came along, and they were taken care of. And this consumerization, where they wanted to take care of more of their business, no matter what they were buying or dealing with online, have those interactive relationships through digital means, carried over into every industry. And so, today saying my site doesn't need to be mobile is almost ridiculous for any company, because the amount of traffic that just comes through our phones, it's quite incredible. So from I guess a continuum perspective, there's a lot of options here, right? We've been talking more philosophically right now, but walk me through how I just built a site, launched it, what are my options next?
So I think it starts well before the actual launch phase, right? That you look at your site and you figure out how do you build a foundation that can be iterated upon. And from a technical standpoint, Bruce, I'm sure you can talk more intelligently than I.
Yeah.
I'm just a creative guy.
That's cool. You have your place, Craig.
That's right. Just draw pictures.
The big idea guy and then hand it. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. We find with our small and mid-market clients is sometimes they'll come and say, I heard you talk about iteration. I just want to iterate this homepage, or I just want to do this or that. But you need some good scaffolding. You need some good bones to your stuff to begin with, like you said, Craig, right? So you need a good foundation. You can't avoid that in a lot of respect.
Because we've seen this blow up for clients too, that have a old non-responsive website, and they ask us just to make the ordering page responsive or one part of it responsive, and they end up investing more money and resources to kind of cobble this thing together than if they were to do it right from the start.
Right, right. And so it's if you have, it depends on the step you want to take. if it's going from desktop to responsive, it's a pretty big step that you want to take some time to. But if it's an iteration of I'm responsive, but this page is not performing, hell, this whole section of my site is not performing, can you help, you know, what should we do? Then that's a bigger, better case for an iteration with a quicker turn, with you know, more deliberate intention than like the big jump that typically a move to responsive requires.
So I feel compelled to mention that iterative design isn't just the structural back end technical aspect of a site. You can iterate on the visual design of a site too.
Absolutely.
You know, in our trends book out now, that I've also written a story about a brand evolution, brand revolution. I'm going to touch upon a couple of those things, but the idea of taking your brand and instead of throwing away all the brand equity you've developed over years and launching a brand new brand, you know, sometimes a better approach is to tweak it, evolve it a little bit, make it a little more contemporary. And this isn't just about websites, right? This is about a holistic brand where you can apply it to your website, your collateral, your TV, whatever. But this is can be part of your iterative where you take a kind of an old-fashioned style website and maybe you don't change the bones of it all, that you just change the visual design of it a bit to make it resonate better with a more contemporary audience.
Yeah, that's an easy first step, right? And I think a piece, too, from a creative perspective, is very metrics-based. And I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts from both creative and a user experience standpoint on how, you know, more attention to the metrics can really lead to a plethora of iterative changes that are going to have great return on that time and money invested.
Yeah, so you're pulling on the metrics, right? Yeah, let them make the decisions for you. And a lot of the UX, that's where A-B testing, multivariate testing, you know, heat mapping, that those all roll into it, right? Those are all things that we look at and refer our clients to establish, right? A regular cadence and discipline to look at those things and then let those draw the conclusions for you. A lot of the times...
Well, explain. Why don't you explain some of those terms you just mentioned?
Okay, so A-B is essentially, say, and I'll go through the process. Our typical web process, we create a wireframe, right? You create a wireframe in the experience, and you go through the ins and outs, the business aligned with the user wants and needs, and pretty much at that point, I mean, you could look at stats and where the pages need to be and what the content is most popular and what the users are doing, and... But ultimately, there is a bit of a theory there, right?
Right.
There's a theory as far as, you know, I see it this way, and I know my customers will see it that way too. Not so much. It's I think my customers will see it this way, right? So it's that discipline to, after launch, look at the stats regularly, see where they're going. You could actually now see, with the heat mapping, you could see the density of clicks where within the site, and the technology's been around. The cost to use said technologies has gone down dramatically since they first came around. So these things should be done. They should be included. They should be discussed on a regular basis. I think there's a lot of opportunity missed without doing so.
Let me jump in for a second to talk about A-B testing. That, you know, I live in a world, the creative world, where things can be very subjective, right? I like the look of this or I don't like the look of this. But A-B testing really informs a lot of the decisions we make on the design side, too, because we can test very concrete things. Does this button style, you know, is it easier for a client to see than this button style, right? These are things that we can test and then we can iterate and tweak to so that we really streamline the client interactions on the site.
So that's a great point, Craig. What types of things are you guys seeing that clients want to test for? You know, what do they want to optimize for?
I see a lot, just the language. It's content, right? Does that phrase resonate with me as a user? Do you have a navigation that's very utilitarian or noun-based? Or is it more, verb-based, right, as far as action? You know, take action, join, give, become a member, or just membership. Those are the kinds of things that right. we see and, you know, try to gauge the results on.
Yeah, I think from as far as my team's concerned, we see clients come to us and say our brand just feels, or well, they'll say our website feels tired, that we're not excited about it. Now, a lot of that is driven by the client, right? If they're living with a website and they're seeing it day in, day out, their perception of their site may be very different than their customers that right. visit once a week, a handful of times a year. So that's something to take into account. But through iterative design, it allows us to go in and maybe polish it up, you know, make some cosmetic changes, not really have to go through the time and expense of doing a full website overhaul, and then you know, optimize some of the key processes, right? Because it's all about, you know, either finding more leads or selling more product, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, those are the two things, and education, right? That those are the things that your website has to do, and if it's not doing any of those things, you know, well, why do you have it?
Right, and that's the stuff that I hear about. You know, how is it driving more leads back to the business? Or it might be e-commerce, right? So how are we optimizing the experience, getting people to fill up that basket and finish, you know, with a transaction? But other businesses, it might just be we need to drive subscriptions. We need to drive revenue, or I'm sorry, subscribers into email or social or other channels that they want to collect information on. But again, I think, Craig, to your point, it's how do you push people towards that? How do you incrementally improve that over time, and not take it for granted that, well, it's a nice big button, so it must be clear to click on it to become, you know, a subscriber or to call us.
You know, I think that's a critical point. When we're talking about iterative design, it is incremental in general. It's small changes that have small effects. So if I can do something to my e-commerce site that improves sales by 2%, that doesn't seem like a big number, but if you're selling $4 million through your website a year, that translates into real dollars.
Absolutely. No, I 100% agree with you. I think that is the key to iterative, that we get out of the boom bust cycle of these sites and we move the needle slightly. And I think that depends on the company, and maybe you guys can talk about this. You know, how often should we be doing iterative changes to a site?
Go ahead.
So it's to Bruce's point earlier, I think a lot of it is driven by data, right? That having a regular schedule that's arbitrary isn't going to help either. If you change the visual design of your site every month, every quarter, that's probably going to work against you, because then you're going to introduce confusion and you're going to make it an uncomfortable experience for users. But you need to monitor that data, and when you start to get the dip, maybe that's the point where you introduce some changes. Or maybe that there's not a dip, but it's not rising the way you want it.
Right.
So then you proactively say, well, what can we do to tweak this either foundationally or visually or content-wise or through some other mechanism to try to bolster the goals a little bit?
Listen, right? Spend, you know, listen to your customers, listen to your channels and your distributors. If there's opportunities, let them dictate, you know, how soon you go after iterating a experience. Like, is your if you start hearing complaints about your distributor locator, your distributors are getting a little angry about how they're represented or how easy a consumer can potentially find them mm-hmm. via your channel. Get to it. Talk about, hey, I just want to improve this interface. Let's talk about it. Okay.
So we haven't talked about what this costs, right? But maybe, Jason, you have some war stories about how we've been able to be creative and clever with clients' budget to make it work.
Yeah, that's a great point, Craig, because I think, again, a lot of companies will go back to, well, this is just for big enterprises. It can't be possibly for my brand. And I think you've given a lot of ideas around small incremental improvements, again, that are metrics-based, et cetera. And everyone can get on these. It's really about that cadence you mentioned. So we've had clients where post-launch, it's really it's more of a budgetary discipline to say, I'm going to spend X on my site and to improve that experience, to essentially improve the investment that I made a year ago in it. And that X amount is going to be different per company, per industry, and rightfully so. But that discipline to put it into a budget and then to revisit the numbers at whatever frequency is right for that company or that brand is really the key difference that's going to, I think, separate them from a lot of their competition that Bruce was talking about before, that first mover advantage. So we've had clients that say, listen, I can't spend a lot, but I'm going to spend a couple or a few thousand dollars a year, saying, all right, we're going to look at small incremental improvements that we can do. To others saying, you know what, I can spend much more than that. Great, we're going to build actually new features and new modules, new ways to service your clientele or potential clientele. So it's across that spectrum from a budgetary piece. It's really just philosophically more important to have the discipline to put it in there and then the cadence to execute on it.
And even though you traditionally think of something like a website coming out of a marketing budget, we've had clients that are so invested in it or the site's so important that it comes out of capital.
Absolutely. You know, that's a really interesting thing that got us thinking about this iterative philosophy a couple of years ago was, you know, when we started sitting in front of capital expenditure committees, after several of these meetings, we got to the core of it was that these committees were used to investing in plant and equipment. I'm going to build a building. I'm going to invest in a fleet of trucks, whatever it is. Well, you know what? I can put my arms around those at the end of the day. I really can't with this digital stuff. You know, it's a website or it's whatever. And, you know, we said, listen, you wouldn't stop putting oil in your fleet of trucks when it ran out. You wouldn't not budget to do roof repairs on this building 5-10 years after you opened it up. The same thing is with your website and other digital means too, but especially the site is kind of that hub of your marketing communications and many times your operations. So how do we budget to take care of this initial investment and make it last longer so we don't tear it down? Because you'd never tear down a building you just built a few years ago.
Yep. So at the end of the day, I think the message is, invest in your website, your digital platforms with the same care that you would invest into any other aspect of your business that's client-facing and so critical to your business.
Yeah.
So iterative design, again, is just one of the topics that we cover in our mid-year trends book available now. You can go to our website, thundertech.com, and get a request a print version of our book, or you can always download the electronic version. While you're there, you can check out all the other podcasts in our series. They cover a variety of fascinating topics that we're sure will be of some value to you. This is Craig Israel. Thanks again to my guests, Jason and Bruce.
Absolutely.
For this very special episode of Thundercast. As always, if you've liked what you've heard today, go to iTunes or Stitcher and subscribe or wherever fine podcasts are sold and become a subscribing member. Thanks a lot.